In the summer of 2002, I worked incessantly to complete my PhD dissertation on deadline. My faculty advisors at Harvard had already set my defense date so that I could begin a prestigious fellowship starting in September. Everything seemed on track for a successful start to my academic career. Well, everything except for that one minor detail I'd neglected to share with my committee. Of the 10 chapters and appendixes in my dissertation, I still needed to write 7 of them. In mid-June, I finally quit my full-time job to finish it. Early one August morning, after weeks of pushing myself to write 16 hours a day without any days off, I carried my coffee mug into my study and turned on the computer. I opened my draft, reread the paragraph I'd finished late the night before, and started writing. I was halfway through my first sentence when I puked all over the keyboard. After running for paper towels to clean up my mess, it quickly became apparent that my vomit was permanently lodged under some of the keys. The space bar was especially hard hit. No amount of wiping it up could rectify the situation. I brushed my teeth, washed my spew-speckled arms, and found my shoes and my wallet. Outside, I threw the keyboard into the trash can and climbed into the car. I drove to a shopping center and parked. It was 7:50 in the morning. When Staples opened at 8, I was the first one in the door. New keyboard in hand, I was back at my computer finishing that first sentence of the morning by 8:30. Suck it up and drive on. To be clear, I didn't have a stomach bug or food poisoning. Rather, I'd been living for years with relentless bouts of nausea and lack of appetite. Here's a snapshot of me and my overscheduled, extremely compartmentalized, and rigorously well-organized life circa 2002. I was compulsively driven to achieve. I was addicted to demanding workouts to maintain my body's physical prowess. I was incessantly cheerful at work while experiencing radical mood swings and crying jags at home. My mind raced with thoughts about my never-ending to-do list and what-if worst-case scenarios. My body was hypervigilant and tense from projecting an external aura of self-confidence while internally bracing against when the other shoe would drop. I was severely claustrophobic and hypersensitive to crowds, traffic, loud noises, and bright lights. Between insomnia and terrible nightmares, I rarely slept. In retrospect, I see that the message that my body transmitted to me that morning was clever, dramatic, and spot on. At that moment, I was literally sick of this expletive here project, and I desperately needed a break. However, I didn't have the time to think about that right then. I had a dissertation to finish, and I was running out of time. And so I overrode this rather extreme signal from my body and just kept writing. I delivered my completed manuscript by deadline. I successfully defended my PhD dissertation and started my fellowship on schedule that fall. I was also an anxious workaholic wreck. So how did I get here? How did I end up literally puking out a Harvard PhD dissertation? Why did my body present me with such an extreme signal that morning? And why was my mostly unconscious default response simply to ignore and override that signal and keep pushing? In many ways, finding answers to these questions has motivated my work over the last 15 years. Perhaps not surprising, since I'm a political scientist who teaches about international security, in 2002, I made sense of the keyboard incident as my body waging an insurgency against my mind's drive to perform and succeed. Of course, inherent in this explanation is its own recommended cure: counterinsurgency. In other words, just dig in, access deep wells of willpower and determination, and power through. Otherwise, it's just mental weakness and laziness, right? For many decades, I considered my capacity to ignore and override my body and my emotions in this way to be a good thing, a sign of strength, self-discipline, and determination. And from one perspective, it was. But as I'll explain in this book, from another perspective, this default strategy was actually undermining my performance and well-being. Of course, I'm not alone in this conditioning. It's a common way of relating to experience that many people call suck it up and drive on, or powering through. Contemporary American culture in general, and warrior culture in particular, prizes this approach to life. We've all heard, and perhaps even admire, stories of people overcoming extreme adversity or simply pushing through challenges and setbacks with perseverance to succeed. And, as I'll explain shortly, many conveniences of our modern world exist almost entirely to facilitate our suck-it-up-and-drive-on addictions. Nonetheless, although the self-determination to power through stressors in this way can be admirable, and during certain immediate life-or-death situations is absolutely critical for survival, this way of approaching life can have some dark consequences over the longer term.